You're listening to Artistic Finance, show 160. Today, we get an update on the Artistic Finance 6K, the $6,000 of investments we purchased in May of 2021. Now, this panel includes a bond investment CEO and two lighting designers to review how our investments compare to the market. Now, we recorded this back in February. I'm just getting around to publishing. So the stock market this week is finally coming down from its highs that we reference in the episode. Without further ado, let's get to the show.
You are listening to Artistic Finance, where we help creatives learn about the business of show business.
Welcome and thank you for listening. I'm your host, Ethan Steimel, broadcasting out of Phoenix, Arizona. And today I welcome back my superstar armchair investor panel, the CEO of the bond investing app Liquidify, joining us from Denver, Maitre Gopalakrishnan.
Hey, Ethan. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here again.
We also have lighting designer and project manager joining us from Los Angeles, Ebony Madry. And we have lighting multi-hyphenate entrepreneur who was at Burning Man during our last update, but has returned to us and returned to reality, the one and only Amy D. Lux.
Thank you, Ethan. So good to finally be back with you.
Before we start, a disclaimer that we are not financial professionals. Well, okay, Maitre technically is, but in this context, she is not recommending anything or giving any financial advice. We're all just chatting. The rest of us are lighting designers who have no qualifications regarding finance, and we just know that we've had to figure it out for our careers, and that's why we're here talking about it in an attempt to learn more and to help others learn more. So that being said, nothing on today's episode should be considered financial advice. Please seek professional financial advice before making any decisions for yourself. Thank you for being here and for our ongoing series tracking investments that we ourselves have picked, learning if we can maintain our own investments and save for retirement, or should we all be getting help from a financial advisor? Now, if you want to hear previous episodes in this series, search for episodes titled The Artistic Finance 6K. Now, we're recording this February 25th, 2024, and we have been tracking $6,000 of investments since May of 2021, which means that we're in the third year and the third quarter of our ownership. So even though the markets are in the first quarter of 2024, our 6K investing is in its third year and third quarter, so I'm calling it the 6K 3.3 review. First things first, what is the state of the market today? And I'm hoping, Maitre, do you know?
Yeah. This past few weeks, the start of 2024, has been, I'd say, pretty outstanding for the S&P 500. And I know just in the past month, a month prior to this reporting to today, the market, the S&P 500 index has gone up by nearly 4% just in that short period of time. So it's actually been chugging along pretty well. There's always mixed reviews about, you know, where the market's going to go in the future and this and that. But as of now, looking pretty strong.
Amazing. And I will say that my father-in-law, he's been telling me, he said, because, okay, I should say we skipped a quarter just because life got in the way for me. So we've skipped one quarter of review. So we're actually reviewing like a half year later from when we lasted, which was September. But my father-in-law, back in like November, December, he said, you know, for your next update, I think you're going to be really happy. I think you're going to be really happy. So that's like the only reason I knew that the market was like sort of doing it pretty well. And then today, when I checked our investments for this, I was like, oh yeah, the S&P 500 has done crazy things. Okay, market's doing well. So let's get on to the Artistic Finance 6K investments, how they're doing. So I pulled up my little tracker here and I'm just going to go through. So starting with the S&P 500, we bought $1,000 worth of it in May 2021. It is now almost $1,300. So our S&P is up about 30%, which is crazy cool. The stocks that I picked, because I thought I can beat the S&P 500, the stocks that I have picked are overall down 7%. So I'm trailing the stock market almost 40%. The REITs that I picked, the real estate that I picked, which is slow and steady, that is up 13%. So that's, I'm pretty happy with that. Bitcoin, our $1,000 of Bitcoin is roughly $900 now. So that is down 10%. The wine investment is down 15%. So he bought $1,000 a case of wine. It is now worth $844. So a little bit disappointed there. And then the sixth one is a piece of art that we bought. That has not appreciated. That is an aesthetic thing. So I'm not really counting that in this financial investing. But if I were, it would be down 100% because I don't know that I could sell it for the $1,000 I purchased it for. Okay, so if we add those all up and I pull out the art, because I'm not counting that one, the $5,000 that we invested is now $5,082. So overall, we are up 2% on our investments, which is okay. It's okay, but it's definitely behind inflation because inflation's gone wild. And then if we use our measuring stick of the S&P 500, which is up 28.7% since we started, I am trailing that by, 26%. So I would have been better suited, I think, of just putting $5,000 in the S&P 500. But that's totally, totally okay. So just pointing out that the S&P, from when we last checked in, it had gone up 15%. So it's up 28% overall. One of the stocks that I picked was an energy stock. That's VST is the ticker. That had gained 110% since we last looked at this. So it's actually up 215%. So I picked four stocks and they're down overall 7%. But I'm just pointing out that one of them was up 215%, which is sort of crazy. But the tragedy that I had within my stocks is I had a lithium ion mining company because I thought back in May 2021, I was like, I'm really smart. And I know that electric cars are happening and everybody's using lithium and it's a limited resource. So I was like, I'm going to get a lithium mining company. So I got LAC. And as of our last investment, it was actually doing really well. It was up, I don't know if it was up 100% or 150. It was doing quite well. The day after we recorded, they split the stock. So it split into a lithium ion or a lithium like Americas, which is based in Canada, and then a lithium Argentina or something was in South America. They split the stocks and they gave me like the same amount of value that I had. And so I was like, this is great. So then I, of course, don't check my stocks on a daily, weekly, monthly, or really even other monthly basis. So I only checked like today to see where we were. And since the stock split, they have tanked. So they have gone down 70% since we last talked. But now overall, those two stocks are down 40%. So that's like a tragedy. And it's also a tragedy because if you look at the ratings for those two stocks, which are LAC and then LAAC are the tickers, a lot of the analysts say buy them right now. And I'm like, yeah, well, I wish I could buy them right now because it's low. So part of me wants to go and like use some of my other money and like buy some of those because I still do think lithium long-term is going to be great. But it's a tragedy that the random ones I picked are not doing so hot. Oh, well. So Bitcoin, since we last recorded, has gained 45%. So we're only down 10% on our original investment, which may sound tragic and sad, but we have been down 50% almost exclusively since we started with that. So now the real estate investment trusts have gained 5% since our last recording. So overall, we're up by 13%. But I do want to point out that this is similar to my stocks, where one is up 200%, one is down 70% or 40%. So with the real estate trust, I picked four of them, and two are pretty steady. One's gained 5%, one has gained 8%. But then one is down 50%, and then another is up 40%. If I had only picked one of them, I could be either super happy or sad right now. But overall, it balances out to 13%, which is great. But I also want to point out that part of the reason I got the REITs is because they pay dividends. This 13% that they're up is actually almost all from dividends. So the way I calculate my returns is I just say, how much money did I start with and how much money do I have? So it's not actually that the REITs themselves have gained in market value. It's that they've paid out over $100 of dividends. So that's why we're up 13%. So, and that's what I expect out of REITs. That's what I want out of them. So I'm pretty happy with the REITs. All right. Now the wine is a travesty. So since our last recording, we were already down 7%. Now we're down another 7% for a total of 15%. So of the $1,000 that we had, it's now worth $844. I want to point out that the fees for the wine are super high, and it's sort of expected because you're paying for storage and you're paying for the company to manage the storage, all that. But we're down 90% in appreciation, meaning the actual value of the wine, if we were to sell it now, is $90 less than what the $1,000 when we purchased it. But then there's $64 that we've paid in fees. So that's a lot, like that's just a lot in fees that we're paying. More of the story with the wine is I'm pretty fairly disappointed in it. But again, we're hanging on to it. So I mean, let's hope that it appreciates, and then all the fees and all that, I'm super like, oh, the fees were totally worth it. But as of right now, I'm super unhappy with it from a money point of view.
Ethan, one thing that I remember reading about the wine investments was, I think they're anti-correlated, or that's what they said on the website, is they're anti-correlated with the S&P 500. So it could be that, you know, the S&P 500 is doing well and the wine industry is maybe not doing as well because they kind of move in opposite directions. So that could be a reason why that's going.
That is actually a good point. Thank you for reminding me. Back in 2021, when I thought I knew what I was doing, I was like, I'm going to pick some of these as hedges, like to work against each other. And that was actually partially Bitcoin was like one of those things where I was like, oh, this could like uncorrelate to all this other stuff. And you are right with the wine. So it's weird because now I'm hoping for the S&P to tank so that my wine goes high, but then all my other investments would be low. Oh, this is horrible. okay, so all in all, my picks all combined are 26% behind the market. And so this is pretty bad. So I should not ever become a financial advisor. I should in fact rely on one, I think, or the whole like, put everything in the S&P 500, that I should just stick with that. And I will say, though, let's all not be totally sad about this, because the good part of this is that I've really, I think, learned the lesson to like stick with the S&P 500. And all of Theo's money that we're saving for him, so whenever he turns 18 and we are like, here's your birthday money and here's all this, we're just putting that all into the S&P 500. So that is the good thing that has come out of me trailing the market by 26%. Is that I'm going to try to help Theo out by only putting stuff in S&P 500. We'll see. Okay, so do I plan to rebalance any of this? No. As part of my experiment, I'm hanging on to my losers. I'm hanging on to my winners. Ian Dunlop, the investor I follow, he says, hold everything for 10 years, I think. So I'm just holding. And he says, I'm going to be happy after 10 years. So I'm going to count on that. So yeah, so that's the 6K update. And now, my favorite part of the episode, which is when we find out how your investments are all doing. So I'm going to start with you, Maitre, and your bonds. How are they doing?
So these are very rough calculations, I will say. I don't remember the exact dates that I made these purchases and didn't track quite as diligently as you did. But I'd say approximately the JP Morgan bond, I think, is one of my investments that I made for this. Has gained, I guess, 8.3% is kind of what I approximated. It has a lost market value. So I bought it kind of as a premium, and the value of the bond has gone down in the market since then. But I have received coupon payments. So kind of similar to what you mentioned about REITs, I am focusing on the coupon payments or the dividends aspect of this investment. So I guess from the time that I invested, which I think was around August of 2022, it's 8.3% up. And then for my iBond investment, I also made kind of a rough calculation based on, if we remember from the conversation we had about iBonds maybe a few quarters ago, rates are updated every 6 months. I approximated that the kind of annualized rate of return that I had received was around 6.5%. And to date, it's been about 10.5, 10.6% in gain. That's kind of an estimate for where my investments are at. So pretty good, not S&P 500 level, but I mean, bonds are safe. So in general. So.
And I take away from that because I'm up 2%, but you are up at the minimum 6.5%, which is better than my 2% and a much like safer and steadier way to get there.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely safer. I'd say also that's been helped. Like the bonds that I've invested in across the board have been helped by the fact that interest rates rose a lot in 2022 and 2023. And they haven't been, those rates haven't been cut yet. So I'm still kind of able to reap the rewards of that. But, you know, once the rates start going down again, I don't know. We'll see what that looks like. But yeah, so far, so good. So yeah.
Yeah. And then you were, you said the I-bond is up 6.5%, but your gains are 10%.
Oh, yeah. So I calculated an annualized return and then a lifetime return. So the annualized return, I basically took returns, like they change every 6 months, right? Or the yields or whatever. So I just took kind of an average of all of those to get what the annualized would be. And then for my lifetime returns, I looked at, like, I probably invested midway through one of the 6 month periods. So I took that and then, you know, the next returns for 2023 and then the returns for the first couple months of 2024. And that's kind of how I looked at the lifetime return.
I think you're talking above my head a little bit. Like, I understand in theory the difference between the annualized and the lifetime, but just for me, so I'm doing lifetime is all I'm ever doing.
Yeah. So then lifetime is like 10.5% or so is probably the return from the I bond.
Okay. Amazing. All right. So are you happy with these bonds? Do you plan to sell them or?
I'm happy. I'm sticking it out. Yeah. I'm going to wait until they mature. And I think I bonds, there's a period of time where if you sell them kind of prematurely, then you get an interest penalty. So I'm not going to sell it before that for sure. And then we'll see after that. But I think I'm going to hold on to these. So.
Amazing. Awesome. Cool. All right. I am going to jump over to Ebony, if you're ready to share with us, because I'm a big fan of some of your wild choices.
Yeah. Let's go. Okay. I was just looking up, just trying to remember where I was last time. Just again, I should definitely make a little spreadsheet like you did, but I haven't been as diligent. So,
well, I have some leftover notes from last time. Last time your Tesla was down 3%.
Yeah, it's still around there. It's probably 5 now. I'm just looking at some calculations here, but I am going to continue to hold on, see how the Cybertruck is doing now that we see them out in the wild and stuff like that, which is super crazy to see this like weird boxy truck thing just driving on the freeway. Super weird.
I haven't seen one yet.
I've seen one here in Hollywood, and it's like, oh, okay, that is actually what it looks like. Okay, great. So yeah.
They had one leading at the Austin Marathon last weekend, like lead the elite runners out at the beginning of the race. And all I can say is there's nothing, no indication that it's a truck. It is a toy.
Fully. Well, and that, I guess that makes sense, because does he still have the warehouse there in Austin?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that makes sense then. So, yeah. So I'm still holding on to Tesla, hoping to see what happens with the Cybertruck. They're also coming out with a semi, Tesla is as well, like a semi tractor pretty much. So I'm excited to see what that does for the trucking industry.
Do you know what the timeline is on that?
I don't. I thought it was like 2030 or something.
Okay. Only because I see other companies that are like starting to produce buses and trucks and things.
Yeah.
But it's like these things are actually starting to be on the road.
Exactly.
According to Wiki, its production began in 2022 behind schedule, and it's okay, sorry. I thought it said it was going to be promised by, but production started in 2022.
The thing with EV vehicles, at least for the last 10 years, and presumably for the next 10, every time they give you a deadline or something, it's like 5 years later. So it's like all these companies, like Toyota or something, is promising like a 600 mile range car, and it's like, oh yeah, in 3 years, but that really means we'll see if it's here in 10 years.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, I would love to hold on long enough to see what happens with the trucking industry.
So also, Ebony, did you say, you said 5%? Is it down 5% or up 5%?
Down. It's still down.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, that's pretty steady for what it's worth.
I'm gonna keep holding on. My Kroger stock is up 5%, so that is feeling pretty good. Really nice. And I'm really curious, like, what caused this, like, uptick, especially given, like, all the inflation and stuff that we see at grocery stores and things now. So I'm pretty curious as to that.
How much did you say that's changed?
It's up 5.
Up 5. Okay. And you also get dividends, a little bit of dividends?
Yes, a little bit of dividends. Yeah. Really, really tiny.
Maybe because inflation, everything costs more, and somehow that's...
Right, yeah. So that's doing pretty well. And then I have some stock with...
Last time you had NVIDIA.
Yeah, I still have that, actually. I was starting to feel guilty because of all the AI stuff. So I was like, I don't know if I should hold on to it, but I did. And yeah, no, that's doing very well as well. It's still up. It looks like maybe like 8%.
Okay. All right. That's great. Yeah. I'm always interested now in these like technology, because one of my stock picks was Skills, which is like something to do with technology and internet and all that, but it's down 99%. So I always want to see other people's like technology stocks, how they're doing.
NVIDIA released their earnings this past week. Yeah. And they were outstanding in these past quarters.
It's insane. I mean, you think about all the AI stuff that's coming out. I mean, even you open like Adobe Acrobat, and that now has AI stuff, and Photoshop has AI stuff, and there's just a whole bunch of programs that are just really tapping into that. So yeah, I'm sure they're making a good coin on that, all that tie-in and connection. So it's kind of crazy.
So you're overall, you're happy?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm definitely gonna keep holding on. The Tesla one is just like a fun experiment. So I just want to see what happens there. Maybe I look into like another company that's also on the like electric car market and tie into that one too, and just compare the two. That would be, I think that's kind of my next little experiment.
I think the Tesla is one that I just relate it to like Apple or Google or Microsoft. I think you should hang on to it. But even though like, I feel like it's made like a huge amount of gains, but I feel like in 30 years, you're going to be happy if you hang on to Tesla. That being said, I'm not going to go out and get any. It's such like a wild, like I love the company. I believe in the company, but like the CEO is just so crazy.
That's literally my biggest thing right now. Every time I talk about Tesla with my partner, Brianne, she's like, yeah, I don't really want to talk about that guy. Like, not him, it's the product.
Okay, and then Amy added in here that in December 2023, Teslarati reported that the semi's forecasted annual production rate is estimated to be about 50,000 units by the end of 2024. If that was only a couple months ago that they made that estimate, then there might be something. So I would be interested, because I just remember 10 years ago when they unveiled the semi, it was amazing. I was like, wow. And then we've also like, because the Cybertruck is not the only EV truck out there. Like Ford has one, Rivian's is amazing.
And that Rivian is actually another stock that I was like trying to start looking into to just see, you know, what their kind of price point was on the market, because they seem, I think I really like their approach and model and what they're doing for the environment as well. So yeah, it's like a full, it's like more, I feel like well-rounded.
Yeah. Well, here in Phoenix, there's like electric vehicles everywhere. I guess the environment's good for them or something. But I see a lot of Rivians and they look like amazing trucks. And I looked into it, but it's $100,000 to get one.
And the back order is absolutely insane as well. Like people are like, yeah, I ordered this like 5 years ago or whatever. So I don't know if they caught up on production or what.
The only headline I saw from them this week was that their earnings for the year are projected to be 0%.
Yeah, they're way down.
But if you're looking to get into the stock, I don't know. I mean, to me, it just looks like a really good company, and I'm seeing the cars and they look amazing. So if I were going to go get that stock, I probably 2024 might be a good year to get it. I'm not going to do it. Okay, awesome. Awesome, Ebony. So you're happy and you're hanging on to everything. Amy How about you? How are your investments doing?
Investments. So I'll start with the one that I hate the most. My Coinbase coin that I bought, the only stock that I bought, the only individual stock that I bought, and I bought it on Robinhood. And I bought it right when Coinbase went public because I thought I was not as brave as Ethan to get actual Bitcoin. And I thought, well, it's a, you know, now it's a publicly traded entity and it's the largest crypto exchange. So it's my way of getting crypto without having to buy crypto. And so I bought it the day that it went for sale and I bought it at $333 a share and it immediately dropped after that. So currently it's at $165.98, which is 50% of what I bought it for. As much as that is terrible, as of today, it is still down. It's down by 4.93%, but it's actually valued higher than it has. It's doing better than it has been. So per investors.com just 2 days ago, there's been a lot of chatter on the internet about Coinbase because it is doing better than it has in a really long time. As of February 15th, it's reported earnings of $1.04 per share, improving from a loss of $2.46 per share a year ago and ending a streak of 7 consecutive quarterly losses. So total revenue spiked 51%. To $953.8 million, marking the exchange's second consecutive increase after 6 straight quarters of double-digit decline. So it's actually improving currently, which is a surprise. And I don't ever look at this except for when we come to do this. I'm holding it just for the sake of holding it because there's no point in selling it. It's not worth enough. And I don't expect it to go back up. So that was actually a surprise to me that it's doing okay right now. It had huge earnings growth in the last quarter, and that is after a very long-term volatile track record. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. I'm very curious to see how it goes. But it's being projected that the company's annual earnings are going to grow sharply in 2024 by supposedly 537%. We'll see how that goes. But this is like the one I don't hold my breath on. It is just my little gamble, my little experiment there.
Well, pure speculation, because Bitcoin's been doing so well for the last quarter or two. I wonder if somehow that's impacting their revenue. Like, I don't exactly know why or how that would work, but I'm just noticing a correlation because Bitcoin's been down for 2.5 years.
Right. And I mean, they are, you know, they're the largest exchange. That's where most people are going to buy their Bitcoin is through Coinbase.
And that's where for this experiment, that's where I purchased it. I downloaded Coinbase and I'm using their app.
Yeah. Anytime, you know, if there's a great boom with crypto, Coinbase will have a direct reaction to that.
Well, good work that it's only down by 50% now.
Right. It's doing so great. My other oddball pick is the Masterworks. And since I actually last saw you, I have two artworks, Yayoi Kusama and Bridget Riley. I originally bought the Kusama pumpkin painting, A Fractional Share. This is one where it's very theoretical. You buy it for a certain price. There's certain projections, but it's not like your stocks where you can check in every day and see the worth. We don't really know what the value is going to be until it's sold. Masterwork buys real physical art pieces and stores them in climate controlled storage and then sells fractional shares to its members. And then when the entities at Masterworks decide that it is a good time to sell that piece, they sell it. But as a buyer of a fractional share, I don't know when that is going to be and what it's going to yield. Again, another kind of big unknown there, but Kusama did sell. I bought it originally in March of 21, and it sold in August of 2023. It was originally projected to gain a 21.7% value, which again was estimated based on art people that know art things, and I'm learning still, but it actually sold at 31.7% gain. So after having it for only 2.5 years, I got 31.7% of my investment back, which is very high compared to S&P 500 or really any traditional stock or bond. Maybe bonds can be a little bit higher. Maitreya, let us know what you think. But I think 31.7 is pretty high, especially for a 2.5 year turnaround. That's very quick. So I was pretty happy about that. And I still have my Bridget Riley. that I purchased in November of 22. So I'm waiting to see when that sells. And then I'm deciding Masterworks will put out a new artwork about every month. And I'm waiting for the right one to come along to reinvest my earnings from the Kusama. I have decided to only, I'm planning on only purchasing artworks that are either made by women, people of color, or the LGBTQT community. They're a little bit less represented in traditional fine arts. So I'm waiting for the right one to come around and then I'll reinvest in that. So far, pretty happy with, you know, my first sale at Masterworks is looking pretty good. And the overall investor recap for January is looking very good. We have strong momentum projected for 2024. 2023 had global sales of $11.1 billion with 8 Masterworks exits. So anytime one of those artworks exits like the Kusama, then the investors get paid out for that. And then new works are coming in all the time. So looking really strong for 2024.
Amazing. Okay, so that 31.7% gain you got on the Kusama, that was sold roughly 2 years later, 2.5 years later. So you, let's say you put in $1,000, so then you got paid out the $1,000 plus $300, so $1,300.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
And then when you said you're hanging on to it to reinvest it, does that mean it's still in your Masterworks account, just waiting, and then when you see it, something?
Yep. So the minimum investment for Masterworks is typically $500. So I purchased both the Kusama and the Bridget Riley for $500 each. And so I may consider doubling my investment on the next one, depending on what it is. Or I might stick with the $500 for now and, you know, save that dividend balance for something later. Considering how well this went, I kind of do want to up the ante. And the thing is, it's, you cannot buy into something once it's already been filled. So typically they'll put a piece up for sale and then you can buy as many shares as you want that are available until they're gone. And so usually it's going to be, I haven't tracked that very closely, but they'll usually sell, like, I think within a month, maybe at most a quarter, but definitely I think 1 or 2 months is kind of like all the shares are gone pretty quickly, because they do buy like very famous and very renowned works. And even some of the artists that come through that I don't personally know yet, it does give me an opportunity to study them. And, you know, they have a very good track record where whether they are, some of the artists actually still are living. So whether they are alive or not, they do show you the history of the value increasing. So Masterworks were only purchased works that have a high value already and have a high projection. I'm strongly considering doubling up my next investment.
I see. So you put 500 in, so then you roughly have 650 now in the account. So you would just need to add 350 to get to 2 shares for the next purchase.
Yes. And it's not 2 shares. It's the minimum dollar amount, but the $500 on the Kusama, for example, got me 25 shares.
Oh, I understand. Gotcha.
And so compared to, like, those are the ones that are kind of my experimental ones for just experimental for my investments. And, you know, as far as this broadcast goes, but my normal stock investments, I typically lean heavily into VTSAX, which is the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index. And I really love that index and I love index investing. And so that currently is up as well. It's up 4.74% this past month. And then I actually did pull the stats over the year to date. It's up 7.9%. The 5-year mark, it's up 52.38%. And all time, it's up 92.10%. So I feel very safe and strong with index funds in general, but particularly I do really like the Vanguard because for one, it's member owned and they also kind of created index funds in the beginning, as we know from our book club review of John Bogle's book, Common Sense Investing, that we did last year. Very strong and safe, I think, overall index investment there.
Okay. And when you say it's the total stock market, it's not just the S&P 500. Is it, it's global or it's total United States stock market?
This one is the total United States. The S&P 500 is the top 500. So it's also an index or a mutual fund of a group of companies, but the S&P 500 is the top 500 companies, whereas the total stock market is every single company in the US.
Yeah, I'm thinking next time it'd be cool to compare S&P 500 because I'm using that as a measuring stick, but I think the total stock market would also be a really good measuring stick as well. Yeah, can we jump back to Masterworks? Because I compare this to wine, and I'm very unhappy with the wine, but you know, but I treat them as like a similar thing. Like you're buying this actual asset that you have to purchase and then sell, but you have to keep it stored and insured and all that. But Maitre had a question for you, so I'm going to let Maitre ask that.
Yeah, Amy, I figured that there are many other people on the Masterworks sites that they are kind of deciding after they get returns from one investment, what to invest that amount that they yielded in for the future. And so I was wondering, during that time, does Masterworks have something like a high yield savings account or some way of kind of earning interest on that money that you earned, you know, from your investment, so that you can continue to make money between when, you know, you make that sale and when you invest in your next piece?
Yeah, that would be a really nice bonus. I don't believe so. I think it's just kind of like a holding account. If I was paying better attention, I might have pulled it out and put it into a high yield savings while I was deciding. But I actually didn't expect to wait this long. Just life was happening and I, you know, didn't really pay that much attention at the time. But yeah, I think they even encourage you to cash out. And it probably some people have it automated to cash out because you can't, you know, like your index funds or other things, you can't automate your dividends to reinvest because you have to make a decision. So at the moment, no, but that might be something I could suggest.
Amy, something else I wanted to add in here, and I don't know if I mentioned this to you last time, but one of our previous guests, who's also a listener of the show, they were listening to you talking about Masterworks, and they went and they bought, I don't know if it was the same Kasuma that you bought, but they went and they purchased some, and they now are like a Masterworks person too.
Oh, nice. Yay. It was probably different because by the time I came on here, I'd had that for a long time and it was closed. So it was probably a different Kusama, but Kusama has made probably hundreds of pumpkin paintings and various others. So, but that's very exciting because I love that artist and her history is very interesting. So I would definitely encourage anyone to learn about her story and her artworks. But I'm so glad that somebody wanted to go ahead and try that because it is so far proving to be a pretty great platform. I'm really happy with it.
I would say the 31% gain is pretty impressive. Like you're winning right now, Amy. And also I've been stumbling over the name because I'm afraid of saying it wrong. Yaya Kusama.
I know, and I keep meaning to double check too because I think it's Yayoi. It's Y-A-Y-O-I. And I hope I'm not pronouncing. I think about that too. I need to double check.
I'm going to do that homework for next week because I keep avoiding saying it.
Yeah. And I had it for a while and then I didn't say it for a long time. And then I was like, am I saying it right? Or did I mess it up over? My concussion really screwed things up. So now I'm questioning a lot of my pronunciations lately.
Amazing. Awesome. Okay. All right. So that is amazing. I'm so happy everybody's investments seem to be doing pretty well, or at least we're all happy with them. So that's great. So just one question for everybody before we move on, because I have a part two to today's episode that I want to get to. So what have we learned from this investing experiment? And I'll go first in that I have learned that the S&P 500 is the way to go. It is, I'm not going to say smarter than me, but it's doing better than me on pretty much everything. There's a couple random stocks I have in there that have outdone it. But overall, again, I'm learning the lesson every time. The S&P 500 is like, seems to be the safest bet and biggest bang for your buck. All right. So I'm going to jump to Maitre. What have you learned from doing this?
Yeah. I think, as you said, index funds in general, maybe the S&P 500 one, maybe VT Sachs, whatever you choose, is a really kind of steady way to grow your wealth over a longer period of time. There are, of course, going to be down quarters or years, like, you know, what we saw in 2022, but in general, it's kind of that like steady, consistent investment to make. That said, it can be a really good experiment to invest like smaller amounts of money, like not putting like a huge amount of your portfolio into one of these things. But I mean, Amy's Masterworks return is a testament to the potential upside that you can see from taking a small amount of risk in some of these like different or alternative types of investments. So it's certainly a strategy worth exploring as well. Like maybe having a lot of your money in something like an S&P 500 index, but making these small bets and seeing what happens there. So overall, I concur with you, Ethan.
Amazing. All right, Ebony, what have you learned from either you doing this or the rest of us doing this?
I think it's like leaning to the S&P 500, which I still haven't spent the time to really like dig into. So I need to do that. But also, I think just the reasons why we all like, you know, invest or what we choose to invest in and like the passion behind that, the research into that. It's like it's also a lot to do with like what you like as a person. So what you want to spend your money on, very much just like, you know, shopping or, you know, going to the grocery store, you know, or clothes. It can be something that relates to you. And I think that makes it more ingestible or like understandable for people that aren't necessarily, you know, being supported by like a financial advisor or something like that. So I think it's more accessible if you look at it that way. So I appreciate that in this group.
All right, Amy, what have you learned from all this?
My big takeaway with the way I did my investments is, you know, more than I regret buying Coinbase, I actually regret buying it on the Robinhood platform. It's the only thing I've bought in Robinhood, and I don't feel like that is the right platform for me. I've become a huge fan through my research of Vanguard. And so all of my other investments are through Vanguard. And you can also buy Coinbase in Vanguard. I keep wishing that I can just sell it out of Robinhood and buy it back in Vanguard, but I can't really bring myself to buy it again. So I'm like, well, I am planning on keeping it. So I guess I'll just keep my Robinhood account. So overall, I think finance particularly can be very mystifying for a lot of people, and you can get really stuck in decision fatigue. And I did things in baby steps and then kind of rerouted or changed my plan as I went along. And that's been fine for me. Like I started with an Acorns account where I was just letting my pennies invest. And eventually that became too small for me. And then I moved on. But I would rather do that than to like get stuck and not invest at all. I think people should learn something and make some kind of move. But I think one thing that a lot of us will do when we're first learning is that we will think about a stock or a bond, you know, we'll think about what do I want to buy? And we don't really think about the platform. So also research the platform so that you can understand where am I going to put this thing when I buy it? And because that is something that you really do want to have long term, even if you don't keep the same stock or bond or investment, you probably will keep it in the same container. And so Vanguard is a container, Fidelity is a container, Robinhood is a container, right? And so if you can conscientiously decide what container you're going to use along with your strategy in the long term, I think that could be really beneficial.
Wow, that is not anything I was expecting. Let me also just mention with Robinhood, it's a young player. I don't even think it's 10 years old. So there are things about it that we just didn't know when it first came out. When it first came out, it was great. It was like, oh, you can make trades without spending any money. Like they're making their money behind the scenes. So we didn't know things about them. That's one thought. So a little forgiveness for you being on Robinhood there. And then tax loss harvesting, baby. Technically, if you sell that Coinbase, I know you won't purchase it again because you can't bring yourself to do it. But technically, you could sell it out of Robinhood. It would show a tax loss, right? And then you could buy it again in Vanguard. Now, that is illegal, what I just described, because for tax loss harvesting, you can't sell the same thing and then purchase the same thing. You have to buy a completely different thing legally, but no one's watching you, Amy. And technically on a microscopic level, you could get by with like 30 cents of tax loss harvesting here.
Yeah, I mean, I have three shares that are worth $165 each right now. So if they want to come after me for, you know, my like roughly $500 investment.
It is not worth the IRS's time to figure that out. But I'm just saying, because I think you've brought up once before that Robinhood, you're not a big fan of them. And I would say you've brought it up enough times that I just want to encourage you to just sell out and close the account.
I think about it every time, you know, I'm like, maybe I should just let it go. And maybe I will eventually. But like I said, I barely think about that account. I don't even check in on it or anything. It's just kind of like sitting there. Obviously, I'm a huge fan of Vanguard. I love the member base. Their fees are very fair, very low. There's just a lot of things I really love about that platform. And with Robinhood, I think it's great for some people. And, you know, especially all of our friends on Reddit, I know will definitely love a lot of Robinhood. But I think when you are new, it is a little dangerous because that's how a lot of people have gotten in trouble, because you can trade with money that you don't have and, you know, investments that you don't really have. And so I think they need to do a little bit work to protect their users a little bit better and to educate their users a little bit better. But mostly I just want to have all my stuff in one place, because now I want my investments to be simple. And so if with everything in one place, I can keep it simple. Both of my IRAs are in there, you know, just everything is in Vanguard now. So I definitely am a big fan of keeping it simple and keeping it boring. Investments, if you keep it boring, you actually tend to make more money that way. So, but thank you for the encouragement, and I will consider selling out.
Yeah, be a sellout. okay, cool. So if everyone is on board for this, I want to do a part two of today's episode, because this came up on our Fi Club episode 158, talking about the money manual, which Maitre presented. And we were also talking about subscriptions and I think Rocket Money. And it just got me thinking, like, how much do I actually spend per month on subscriptions? Because I always... No. Sorry, Ebony.
No, I've been meaning to do this. This is good. This is good. I'm stressed, though. This is good.
Interrupting to say, I decided to put part two of this episode over on Patreon, so patrons, that will automatically queue up in your personalized podcast feed. Now, in that part, we talk through all of our subscriptions to see how much we're each spending monthly on subscriptions and whether that's good, bad, or neutral. Okay, now back to the episode. All right. Okay. Well, thank you all for doing that. Now let's wrap up. My final question for everyone is, can we get an update on either your life or something with finance or your career? And Ebony, I'm just going to jump in with you. What's up with you?
Yeah, no, I'm doing great here in Los Angeles, gearing up for a couple of festivals, Rolling Loud and Coachella. Rolling Loud is next month, and then Coachella is in April. So working with some great artists. So yeah, really excited to, I'll be able to share more. If people follow me on social media, you'll see it pop up as the shows happen.
Awesome. Maitre, what's up with you?
Well, I was telling Ethan and Amy before we started this call, we've been traveling a lot, which has been a lot of fun. We got a National Parks Pass, which is a really great pro tip for if you want to travel, but you know, keep costs low and spend a lot of time out in nature, the beautiful parks we have in the U.S. So we've been visiting a lot of national parks over the last couple of months, taking weekend or long weekend trips out. So that's been a blast, and starting to do that a lot more. And then in terms of Liquidify, I've been actually teaching my first round of in-person classes about kind of the 101s of investing across you know, a wide variety of topics. And I'm just wrapping up that first session, which has been 7 weeks, this coming Wednesday. So that's been really fun, a good way to engage more with my local community and be able to kind of give back and teach more about investing. So yeah, it's neat.
That's awesome. All right, Amy.
Oh, always lots of stuff going on with me. I completed my first 50K foot race. Last month, and I can't believe I did that, and it was incredible. I put out a little of a survey with my newsletter membership or my newsletter readers, and I got some really great feedback. So next week, I'm releasing a new design on my newsletter that will have all of you know, updates about that kind of stuff. And currently, I'm in Port Lavaca, down on the third coast of Texas, and hanging out at the beach a little bit before I get ready for basically a month of travel. I'm going to be doing a corporate gig in New Orleans next week, followed by the LD Summit with Chauvet in Florida. And then I'm going to split like a maniac the Ledgecation in New York and USITT in Seattle in the same week. So if anybody's going there, I will see you at the trade shows.
That's amazing. Wow. Okay. I'm teaching at Arizona State University lighting. We just wrapped up Clue, our first show for the semester, mentored our lighting student through that. And then I'm prepping to go to Tent Theater in Springfield, Missouri for the summer. And Nicole and Theo will be there too. And we're going to be doing Beautiful, the Carole King musical, Crimes of the Heart, and Mystic Pizza, the musical. And then newsletter. So Nicole has done a really good job. She's gotten two newsletters out this year already for Artistic Finance. And I'll be honest, they have more to do with Theo than finance, but we're trying to get a little more finance stuff into there. And if you want to sign up for those, you can do that at artisticfinance.com/newsletter. Phi Club, Amy Deluxe has kept the Phi Club rolling and has several more episodes in the works. And those will be broadcasting here when as they arrive. Some have already been recorded and we just have to edit them. And then Patreon, thank you to our 27 patrons. I know that we talked about subscription phobia today, but if you would like to help out Artistic Finance and add another subscription into your life, I would love that support. And you can do that by visiting patreon.com/artisticfinance. You can connect with all of these folks on LinkedIn using their names. You can connect with them on Instagram. Their handles will be in the show notes. And the show notes are also where we'll find links. You will find links to everything that we mention. All right. So, Armchair Investor panel, thank you so much for your time and for your energy. That's all we have for today. And we'll see you in May for our next 6K review. And the dad joke to end this episode is, I have a fear of speed bumps, but I'm slowly getting over them. Until next time, break a leg. All right, I know I said the episode was over, but a couple things I want to add. I mentioned Robinhood is a younger company and maybe not even 10 years old. Well, it turns out it turned 10 on April 18th of this year. Just to clarify, we at Artistic Finance have no opinion on Robinhood morally, but I'll add that when the meme stock / GameStop debacle was happening in 2021, where the everyday average Joe investor was going up against hedge funds, Robinhood froze GameStop from being purchased. Now, they later cited regulations on having enough deposits to cover the purchase, but that was not communicated until after, and a lot of users lost trust in the platform from that. So that's a mini history of why some people avoid Robinhood. Also, I mentioned tax loss harvesting, something I'm completely unqualified to discuss, but since we recorded this in February, the platform that I use to keep our S&P 500 index, the platform is called M1 Finance, has started charging $3 a month for accounts that have a balance of less than $10,000. Now, we only have $1,000 of the S&P 500, so we would be charged that fee every month. So I sold out of the fund there, and I repurchased it on the Robinhood platform. Now, I use Robinhood because it's very simple, and I already have some of our 6K stocks there. So pointing this out because even though I said I was holding all positions forever or, you know, waiting it out, I had to sell out of that position, but I reopened it immediately. And one final thing, and I mentioned briefly, just offhand comment in the episode, that Rivian stock had tanked and that this might be a good time to buy, because they reported 0% growth for this year. Now, if you don't know, Rivian is an electric vehicle manufacturer, and they've started with an electric pickup truck that they've been manufacturing for a while. At least there's several on the roads. It's their only vehicle at this point. So my sister had texted me after this recording, like she didn't know anything about this recording, but she had mentioned that Rivian had taken a stock hit. Now, basically, a lot of people, experts you might call them, are predicting that the company will eventually go under. And they're probably right, of course. But I, living in Phoenix, I see the Rivian trucks driving around and I think they look amazing. They look super cool. They're also coming out with a moderately priced SUV or a small SUV or a Jeep, whatever that's called. But it looks perfect for a family of three. Unfortunately, that's not projected to actually come out for another couple of years, at least the affordable like $30,000 option. And in EV terms, that probably means like 10 years. But anyway, Nicole and I are eventually going to need a second car. So I think it'd be cool if it was a Rivian, but I also just like to keep my eyes open. And then this is, I've never really talked about this on the show, but I'm a big EV fan. Like I'm not a car guy, but when I was younger, I found out that electric cars were built back in the 1880s. Basically, when they started making cars, they were making them electric. but then obviously, internal combustion engine cars became more affordable and efficient and all that. So the electric cars all but disappeared. But I always found it strange, like growing up, you know, when I don't understand what's going on, but I'm like, it's so weird that no company has built an electric car, because like golf carts are electric. And yeah, I know they're not cars, but in my brain, it's like, well, if you just 10x the battery, right? Couldn't a golf cart just drive for hours? And and then you just build the car shell around it, right? Anyway, so another reason I was always perplexed by this was that 9/11 had a bit of an effect on me, and the subsequent war, which of course was sort of about oil. And I always thought, like, why are we always fighting? Like, why are we always getting trouble with the world trying to get affordable oil? You know, like, that doesn't seem healthy for as a country to sort of rely on just going to war to get the oil. Anyway, my parents also lived through gas shortages in the 1970s. And so I always thought, like, why don't we do something so that we don't need all this oil? Like, why are these gas shortages affecting us? Like, if we had electric cars, right? Wouldn't this be not as much of an issue? And then when I was younger, I also thought being patriotic was important. And it always seemed patriotic to me to go for renewable energy, because, you know, then you can defend yourself. This is my brain, right? It's like, if we don't need to rely on the oil, then you know. So I always thought electric vehicles would just be like a naturally really good thing, and I was always sort of surprised that we didn't do it. Saying all this to say that I always, you know, just keep my eye on the electric vehicles because I'm fascinated by them and renewable energy, and that's why I pay attention to Rivian. So anyway, my sister texted and she said the stock is tanking. So I thought, okay, and I went and I bought 37 shares. And I'm mentioning it because I don't really buy stocks other than this experiment. So I just feel like I have to share it. And I'll point out that this was an emotional decision that is my strange way of saying, I support you, Rivian. And if you survive long enough, I hope to buy one of your cars one day because they look dope. So anyway, just sharing. That's it. Happy end of April to you. I hope you filed your taxes in timely manner, or at least an extension. And I hope to see you again in a couple weeks for the May quarterly update. Even though I already fake wrapped the episode once today, let me do it again. That is now it for today. Until next time, break a leg.
Thank you for listening to Artistic Finance, where we interview successful artists, leaders, and investors to help educate and inspire the creative community. To access our show notes and resources, go to artisticfinance.com. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any decision, consult a professional. This show is copyrighted by Artistic Finance. Written permission must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.